Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you stopped by this morning. This morning, we're going to have Monica Swift on the air and myself, of course, and Shelley. And we're going to talk about some of the natural avenues to take if you're fighting cancer. We do not portray any of these natural foods and applications as you know, the only thing to do. We do, however, believe that there are some things we can do that put ourselves in a better place. And of course, building up your body to fight cancer cells is probably the smartest thing you can do for yourself. And in building up your body, you strengthen all of your organs, your core, everything. And when I talk about building it up, I don't mean you're supposed to go to the gym every day and work out, although that's good for some of us. What about those of us who never led the kind of life where we worked out all the time, but we were always busy, we were always on our feet, and now we're in our kind of rusty golden years, and we're trying to promote some good health. There's lots of things you can do, and there's lots of things that even the finest educational hospitals have learned about the properties of our natural ways of doing things. So I'm going to bring in Shelley. And I'm going to bring in Monica, and we're going to talk about this. I just lost Shelley the minute I said that, so she'll be back. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, dear. How are you?
I'm doing well.
That's good. Is it freezing and snowing and blowing there?
Not snowing and blowing, but freezing, definitely.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, it's probably around 15 degrees.
Oh. Geez, and my whole family was panicking this morning. Well, because the weatherman was saying it was going to be in the 40s this morning, and it's like 52 out here this morning. And everybody was like, oh, Grandma, what am I going to wear? And I said, I don't really think it's going to be that cold, and it isn't. But tonight is supposed to be in the 40s. And, of course, for us, have you ever lived in Florida, Monica?
Yes. Yes, that's where I met Lindsay.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure about that. Well, the cold weather in Florida, because of all the humidity, is very damp. So 40 here could probably contend with, yeah, yeah, it really, really does. And if the wind is blowing, it's it can be very, very chilly. Well, tonight I decided I have to bring in all the plants and all that kind of stuff. So I think that tonight is supposed to be a great deal cooler. But we'll see what happens. Shell, did I get you in?
Yeah, I got in finally. I was having a hard time dialing in. A couple of mornings when I dial in, there's just such severe static on my side, and it takes me two or three dials before I get a clear connection, and then it's fine for the rest of the show. So I'm not sure what that's all about, but it's technical issues.
Yeah. Well, you know what I noticed the other day when I was at your house, too? You have grown a lot of trees around your house again. You've got the bushes in the front and everything. The back is cleared more than I remember it, but you almost can't even see your house anymore.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's always been like that with the trees. It's just that the shrubbery around the outside, they got damaged when I had some work done on the side property. They ripped out almost two-thirds of all the thick foliage there over the last, it's been about 3 years, I guess, it's all grown back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very densely. But I don't think that would interfere with this. It'd be like electrical lines that would interfere with this, not trees and stuff.
Yeah, but I think a lot of our lines now are intercepted by all the virtual lines, all the towers and everything, you know. So it's our our airwaves have become increasingly crowded, let's just put it that way. And you and I have had trouble ever since we first started the show sometimes with connections. So, and it's funny, I never have a problem with Monica, and she's calling me all the way from North Carolina. And you're right down the street from Michelle, you know. So today we are going to talk about, this is right up Shelley's alley as well, Monica. She and I talked last night, and there's a lot of really safe, no side effect kind of procedures to follow if you are worried about family cancer, if you come from a family that is surrounded by any kind of cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, leukemia. All the ones that seem to run in families. In my family now, there's been at least five lung cancers, and there's been five now mouth and head and neck cancer. So it is, I think it chooses the weaknesses of a breed, so to speak, and it hones in on them. So when Monica and I talked last night, she's done a lot of research, and this is going to be right up our alley just from what we learned at the Institute and, of course, your continued research. But I'd like to present some simple, preventative maintenance against things like cancer, especially if you're worried. If you've been diagnosed, then I'm going to have Monica and Shelley speak to some of the things that may help, and I will chime in when I think I can help. But I think there's a lot of things that we need to know about cancer itself. And I'm going to start this conversation out by saying that if you have cancer in your family and you are concerned and you're not of excellent health, which doesn't make a difference, by the way. Cancer doesn't care. Cancer is very, very strong and really doesn't care who you are or why you are or where you are. So sugar, singly speaking, of all the things that will feed, help grow, and comfort a cancer cell, it's sugar. So I'm going to hand over this conversation. Like I said, I will intervene there's a question I have or something like that, but I'd like Monica and Shelley to actually have this conversation. So you want to get rolling on it, girls?
Okay.
Good morning, Monica.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, let's see. Rainey's absolutely right. Sugar is the biggest problem with feeding cancer cells. And if you are concerned about concerned about cancer, like Rainey said, you've got to get rid of the sugar in all forms. Even the starches that you wouldn't think our sugar, potatoes, rice, pasta, they turn into sugar in the body. And that also feeds the cancer cells. So diet is the most important thing to combating sugar, cancer. You have to change your diet. Most people are on the SAD diet, standard American diet, which is processed foods. The things in the grocery store that are in the middle of the grocery store are the things that will hurt you.
Right.
People have to also get back to cooking for themselves, because in most restaurants, they use processed foods.
Right.
And there's chemicals in there and toxins and sugars and MSG and all kinds of things that will hurt you. And diet's the most important thing. to getting rid of cancer or preventing cancer. Take it, Shelley.
You know, one of the things, one of the premises of that we taught at Hippocrates, which I still believe today, it's been proven hundreds of times over, is that one of the most powerful way to combat any cancer is to alkalize your body. And what that means is that you either have an alkaline balance to your body chemistry or you have an acidic balance. And you can test this. You can either test your saliva or test your urine. There's different ways of testing your alkalinity. But if you are acidic in any way, this opens the door not only for cancer but for any disease. All diseases are caused by an acidicness to the body. Like diabetes is basically having an acidic pancreas. That's what it is. That's what causes disease. In 1931, a doctor named Dr. Otto Warburg discovered that an acidic condition is what causes cancer, meaning that there's a very low concentration of oxygen, where a higher concentration of oxygen molecules will raise the alkalinity, a lower amount of oxygen creates acidity, and this invites in cancer and other diseases. And he was actually awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in Medicine back in 1931 for this discovery. So it's kind of astonishing that a discovery would have been made that earned a doctor a Nobel Peace Prize, and the medical establishment has not taken that and run with it. It's been all the natural remedies and therapists in that regard that took that information and did something with it. But regular Western medicine does not do anything that alkalizes the body, which is...
They make it more acidic by doing the chemo and radiation, in my opinion.
Chemo and radiation is like absolutely positively the worst thing you can do to yourself. And I've said this on the air, and I will say this to anybody, any doctor.
Yeah, are you there?
You know, I never lost you on the dashboard, but I knew you weren't there. Okay. Chemo and radiation is poison. And it's
right.
It is.
The cancer cells, but there's no chemo and radiation do not have any kind of mechanism that lets it decipher between a cancer cell and a good cell.
Right. So it's counterproductive. You are taking out cancer cells, but you're also taking out healthy immune cells that you need to fight the cancer. That's why so many people will go through chemo radiation and end up succumbing anyway, but they die as a result of complications due to the treatment, not due to the cancer, you know? And it's tragic when you think about that. Because
especially going through all that pain that they went through and sickness and feeling miserable and horrible, they can't do anything for themselves.
Yep,
I mean, what kind of life is that for a year, you know?
And I know people personally that either didn't do chemo and radiation at all, they didn't do anything, they didn't cure their cancer because they didn't do anything, and they lived for 5, 6, 7 years with the cancer, and they were aware of the symptoms of the cancer, but it didn't get worse. It was just there, you know. So they had some pain, they had some issues because of it. But when you do chemo and radiation, they think 2 to 5 years is a successful extension of your life, where I know people that didn't do anything. When I was living in New York, my best friend's mother had bladder cancer and lived with it for 17 years. Didn't do anything, you know.
Wow.
You know, so it's like, and I know these real-life stories. But my own uncle Steve, who did do chemo and radiation, the last 4 years of his life were absolutely horrible. He became emaciated. He became crippled at the end. He lost, at the end, he looked like a child. He had lost so much weight that he was skeletal. And, I mean, when I went to see him in his last few days at the hospital, I almost didn't recognize him. Except the personality was still there. He was an absolutely beautiful human being. So the few people that I had seen go through chemo and radiation never survived it anyway. So even before I got into all the studies I did, I was exposed to so many people that were just ravaged by chemo and radiation. I had already made the decision never to go there, even if I had ever been diagnosed.
Absolutely. I agree. I was the same way. I've seen people go through that, and I would never, ever do that, chemo.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The other thing you and Rini both said that sugar is like the biggest nutrient to cancer. And the diet is extremely important, and I agree with both of you wholeheartedly. But the other thing is, and this is something I write about in my book, is that when you're talking about alkalizing or acidifying the body, diet isn't the only thing that does that. So you also have to look at the products that you use, that you put on your skin, because whatever you put on your skin, you are, in fact, ingesting, even though you're not eating it by mouth. Your skin is your biggest organ. So you're going to absorb it. So if you're eating a really clean diet, but you're still putting things on your skin that have all kinds of poisons in them, then you're still creating an environment that can create cancer. So it's important to look at the products you clean your house with and the products you put on your body, and then also your emotional and mental attitudes. Because if you're always angry, if you're always depressed, if you're always moody, if things just aren't okay with you and you're always upset with people, that's an environment that creates acidity in the body. That can acidify many different organs in our body, just having that mental attitude towards life. And that can invite cancer. As a matter of fact, I think that almost every cancer is related to stress. So many of the people that came to Hippocrates, when we talked to them, had just gone through a divorce, had just lost a job, had just moved, had done something stressful within 6 months of getting the cancer diagnosis. So stress really, really, really creates the environment and opens the door for cancer.
Absolutely. I agree. The adrenals have so much to do with it.
Yep.
And stress and anxiety and, yeah, definitely. That has
Monica,
a lot to do with.
If you found if somebody, know that you are talking with a lot of people on your site, and I'd like you to announce the site again today. I did post it on my Facebook page, but it's gone again already, so I've got to bring it up again. I think that they need to know that they can ask you questions on that site, and you're helping people. What if somebody called you and had just found, hadn't done anything yet, but they have a lump on their breast? Do you have a protocol to give to them?
Yes, absolutely. I'm working with a woman for like the last 4 or 5 months. She has breast cancer. And she sent me over Facebook, privately, of course, a picture of her tumor on her breast, and it's huge. It's at least 2 inches above her breast.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really big. She declined chemo and radiation. She declined surgery. She is seeing a doctor. And the only thing that she's been doing is she changed her diet. No sugar. She went to a total vegetarian, vegan diet, and the tumor hasn't shrunk at all in the last year. So that's why I started doing a whole lot of research on cancer, trying to find different protocols to help her. And what she's doing right now, because she lives in a state that allows it, she's doing medical cannabis,
mm-hmm.
which is turned into an oil, and she's ingesting that, plus putting it on her breast. She's doing apricot seeds, which have vitamin B17 in them, and that's been known to cancer cells, to kill cancer cells. also, what else? Well, for a while there, because she was a vegetarian, she was always dizzy. She still wasn't getting the, she wasn't getting all of the vitamins out of her foods. So I suggested she move towards a ketogenic diet, which I'm on the fence. If you go on the internet and you look up diet for cancer, everybody says, you know, vegetarian, eat all your vegetables. Of course, stay away from sugar, but tons of vegetables. Well, I'm on the fence on that because I think that a ketogenic diet going 30% full fat in your diet will protect your brain, for one, and it has to be a grass-fed fat, or definitely coconut oil goes in there. It's very healthy for you. And since she changed her diet, of course she still eats a lot of vegetables, but she has also gone into some grass-fed and pastured chicken, pastured eggs, and she's gaining weight again. She did lose about 60 pounds from the first diagnosis of having cancer, but now she's starting to gain some weight because she's eating butter, eggs, a little bit of chicken, fish, that sort of thing. So that protocol is the ketogenic diet, and there's a whole thing on Facebook.
When she's eating chicken and eggs, does she go for free-range meats, or is she just getting regular factory-farmed meats?
No, not factory farm. Only organic, free-range, grass-fed. Because she's getting all of her vitamins that way. Definitely B12, which is building her up. She's feeling much better.
Well, see, one of the things I want to, and I agree with everything you're saying, and I even write about this in my book, because not everybody is willing to become vegetarian. It's almost an emotional decision because people are so attached emotionally to comfort foods and things that are familiar and things like that. So I totally appreciate that. But the bottom line is, if it's done correctly, you get all the nutrients you need, including B12. People think there's no B12 in a vegetarian diet, and that's just not true. You can get all the nutrients you need from a purely vegetarian diet, even one that would help to rid the body of cancer. It's just that we're not educated enough sometimes to make those balanced choices. I actually gained weight when I became vegetarian. You have avocados, which are outstanding, very high in a lot of the oils that you need. In Hippocrates, we had avocados out every day because they're that beneficial, and you do need those fats. But there are other sources of the good type of fats and oils that you need. Nuts are superior. And if you soak the nuts before you eat them, you also create live enzymes in the nuts and the seeds, because we did a lot of soaked nuts and seeds where you'd actually sprout the seeds, very high in protein, very high in enzymes, and again, you're getting those fats that you need so much. So there are plenty of ways of getting the fats and the B12 and all the vitamins and minerals that you need through strictly vegetarian diet. With regard to brain function, that's where Rainey and I are going to be talking about the blue-green algae. Blue-green algae is a food source. It's a superfood. And
spirulina.
Blue-green algae and spirulina, I believe, are two different things. But the blue-green algae is superior in helping people with brain function. We've had kids with ADHD. We've had people with Alzheimer's that went on a blue-green algae protocol and just had quite dramatic results, beneficial results from it. So there is a way of being completely vegetarian, but if that's not your comfort zone, if it's not something you're willing to do, then yes, absolutely, going with some of the good free-range meats, making sure that they're not factory-farmed animals, because then you're just compounding your problem. That is a good way
to go.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah, let me throw this in the mix that the two of you are talking about, because this is, I'm trying to listen like somebody who is just thinking about my own comfort. I try to put myself in the mindset of knowing that I have something like that wrong with me, and I also want to live the rest of my life, the rest of whatever life I have left. I want to live it with some comfort, with some joy. I want to be able to enjoy my family, my grandchildren, my friends, etc. So that's the mindset I put myself in while I'm listening to you to talk. And I don't really have a problem with being a vegetarian. So I had to think about a lot of people I know who would be very difficult for them to give up meat. Why? Because it's a part of their joy. It's a part of
right.
what keeps happy. And when you get sick like that, you are looking for a happy place. You spend a lot of time. That's why so many people turn to other avenues that, of course, bring about their demise even quicker because they're so sick. But I'm thinking to myself, in the perfect world, I have friends that eat to live, and I have friends that live to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, big difference. And those that eat to live, you could tell them to eat, leaves every day, and that would be no problem for them because they're taking their comfort and their joy from another arena. So they could follow any kind of instructions you gave them. And we've met people. We have met people that have become so strict on a vegan, strictly vegan diet that they become consumed by it, almost fanatical about it.
Yes. Yep.
You know, I mean, to the point of, like, their spouses leave them, their family quit having anything to do with them because they go overboard.
Well, and I experienced that myself. When I became vegan, I didn't go there because I had met other vegans that did go there. And even though it was my decision, and I believe that the 2.5 years I was a raw food vegan, I actually became raw foodist for 2.5 years. And I am 100% positive that that's what regenerated my body. That's what healed an 8-year-old knee injury that I was told I had to have surgery for. That's how I got rid of 8 bone spurs in my left shoulder when I was told I needed surgery for that. So I know that that choice is what regenerated my body. But I never hoarded it over other people. If I went out to lunch with my friends, they were all meat eaters. I didn't make them feel guilty. I didn't talk about it, but I ordered what I was comfortable eating. And if somebody asked me why I wasn't eating meat, I would give them short little answers, you know, just enough to give them information, but without sounding like I was on my soapbox. And I inspired more interest by being very laid back with it than if I had tried to impress my decision on other people. You have to let people come to it comfortably, if at all. But I had a relative of mine that became vegan. This individual went from one extreme to another, actually went from being a hunter and a meat eater to becoming a vegetarian, then a vegan, and actually became kind of an obnoxious vegan for a while because it gone from one extreme to the other. They felt that they had, like, you know, had this major epiphany, and then really was one of these fanatical vegans. They have since then kind of, they're still vegetarian, but they put eggs back in their diet and that kind of stuff, so they're not so fanatical. But for a good year there, they were like, oh, my God, this is what makes vegans look nutty when you get too fanatical about your decision. And I think it's a very healthy and a good decision to make as long as you don't hoard it over people like you've made this fantastic decision. It's your decision, and there's other ways to get your body healthy. For me, that was the right choice. It may not be for somebody else.
I also have been doing a lot of reading about eating for your blood type and the metabolic processes that happen of why somebody could easily go and be a vegetarian or a vegan and somebody could easily be a meat eater. because they
actually
need it.
Don't
no,
believe
I,
in that. I've read studies
really?
Done by Neil Bernard and some of the other doctors that have written about vegetarianism. The director of Hippocrates used to lecture about that. The science behind that whole book was actually pseudoscience. A lot of the tests that they say existed, when people tried to research it, actually never existed. I don't know why that book has never been pulled off the market, because a lot of what was in there has been proven not to be accurate. But I know people that have type O blood that are vegans and are superiorly healthy with it. So I'm not so sure that I agree with the findings. It's interesting, but I've heard a lot of, there's a lot of studies on the internet that actually debunk that book.
Yeah,
well,
I've read those too. But for me, there is, my husband could easily be a vegetarian. He'd be happy just to have, eat beans and vegetables and constantly, and has suggested doing that, you know, for better health and everything. I can't do that. I cannot, being a cook and everything, like I am, I love to cook, I could no more give up meat. And we don't eat a lot of meat, maybe 2 to 3 ounces a day,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's grass-fed meat and it is so expensive,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, budgetary concerns, all that. But I could no more give up meat, even if I did have cancer. So that's why I was looking into the ketogenic diet. And that's not a whole lot of meat either. It's mostly fat. So.
Right, right, right. And it's good that you are looking up those options, because there are people out there that don't believe that you can cure cancer and still have meat. So it's good that you're presenting those options for people that it's just too far outside their comfort zone, you know. And now with
right.
the availability of good organically raised animals, that are more humanely
mm-hmm.
raised, number one. So that's a huge concern of mine. And then you're not pumping them full of chemicals, which is one of the things that causes cancer. You know, so it's a safer alternative for people that just can't make that drastic a difference in their comfort
mm-hmm.
zones. And
well, I think, yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay. It doesn't show me that I've lost any of you, so I hope you're all there. I want to say that there are all of these options. Everything that you're talking about are options to, first of all, build.
Rainey, I missed that whole thing you just said. Can you repeat your last 30 seconds?
I just was saying that with all the options that the two of you have just put out there for everybody, the point is, the point that we're trying to make this morning is that there are other options. That
right.
the only option is not just going someplace and letting somebody consume you for 18 weeks, 24 weeks, whatever they tell you you're going to need, and zap every bit of fight that you have left to destroy the cancer yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess what we're trying to explain to everybody, if that's your decision, bless you. We hope, you know, all three of us only want people to be better. We only want people to be happier. We only want people to make better decisions so that they can reach those places.
Mm-hmm.
However, putting the options out there to even, like I said in the beginning of the show, if there's a lot of cancer in your family, the likelihood of you setting up an environment in your body that is conducive to the growth of cancer cells is very, very likely. So what you do is you keep a clean house. That's what you do. You keep
mm-hmm.
all the parts of your own personal domain, which is your body, as healthy as you can keep it. And
mm-hmm.
by doing that, you don't, anybody that I've ever known that came to the Institute or has come to me privately and has cancer, if they have breast cancer, it's always been in their family before. I've never talked to anybody that had breast cancer whose mom, whose aunt, whose sister, whose grandma, somebody didn't have cancer. I have never talked to anybody who has liver cancer, and I say this with all due respect, that either had it in their family or was a drinker, or imbibed in other things that the liver simply couldn't process. The same with many of our other blood disorders. It's all about what you feed your body, and you have to get used to knowing that. So if there's the opportunity to clean up your diet and get it to a better place, start with simple things.
Right.
Simple things. When Monica started her conversation, she talked about processed foods. If you're eating McDonald's every day, I'm going to tell you your cholesterol is going to be sky high, you're taking in lots and lots of chemicals. Just know that and be aware of that. If you are eating all of your
packaged foods, other one.
Where?
Packaged foods, you know, box foods. When you read the ingredient panel and it's like a paragraph, and most of the words you don't recognize. That's another one that has
that's
no nutrition in it. It's known as empty calories. And yet people just fill their shopping carts up with them. If you've got something that's prepackaged and has preservatives in it so it can sit on your shelf for 5 years, guess what? Your body can't break the nutrients down because our digestive system works through a biochemical reaction, and if it can't ferment the food, it can't pull the nutrients out of it. And the preservatives actually prevent the natural biochemical digestive process.
Well, and you have to use common sense. If you go into the kitchen right now and make yourself a bowl of oatmeal and stick it in a box and put it in the refrigerator and don't do anything else to it, is it going to be good in a few days? No, it's not.
No.
It's going to be all dried up. So if the manufacturers take anything and you can keep it on your shelf or even in your refrigerator for so many days, you can bet that there is some kind of preservative in there, some kind of preservative. And let me say this, too, because I've learned this at Hippocrates and in my own life. Some people can eat poop and nothing bothers them. They have a stamina and a core in their body that, for whatever reasons, is unstoppable. Just like some of us can stand in the middle of a wheat field and appreciate the wind blowing through the wheat. It smells sweet. It's beautiful. And then there are some of us whose lungs swell up, nose swells up, eyes water. It could kill them. So, again, you need to know about you. So all of these choices that the girls are giving you this morning are about just that, choices, things that fit you. You're not going to buy a dress that will fit me if you look like Shelley.
Right, but I do want to make one other point on that, Reenie. When you say that, you know, there are people that can literally eat anything that they want. Yeah, and then you and I both know people like that, right?
Yep, we do.
Right. But my own nephew was like that, and literally this kid could eat garbage and never affected him. He always had one of these really good metabolism. He was always very healthy, and he did pretty much eat anything he wanted. His wife is the same way. His wife, Jeanette, is the same way. These two people eat literally anything they want. They never gained weight. They was always in good shape. Both their children have severe health issues. So this is something that I've seen a lot of studies done on that, you know, like, and a lot of people make the comment that you've made. A lot of people say, well, I know people that can eat anything and they never gain weight and they're always healthy and they never get sick. But what it does is it degrades generationally. Wow, I did not pronounce that correctly. But it degrades future generations is what I'm trying to say, okay? Because both their children have severe health issues now, both of them. My little niece has severe life-threatening allergies to four common foods, so they have to they can't even eat in restaurants because they're always so panicked that she might get something that would put her into anaphylaxis instantly. And their son has severe asthma to the point where when we were in Germany, he had to go to the hospital one night. So this is something I'm trying to help them with. You know, when my book comes out, I figured, you know, it's hard to talk to them because they don't really understand diet's role in things because the two of them are so healthy. They don't get it. So I figure once my book's out, I can just hand it to them because they will read it, and it's easier than trying to sit there and tell it to them. You know, so it's more of a gentle way of saying, hey, maybe there's something in here that can help them and let them connect the dots while they're reading the information, because it breaks my heart. So much of it's wrapped around their diet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well,
I see on the Internet all the time how my generation, and I'm in my 50s, we were raised on grass-fed meat. We were raised on pretty much organic vegetables. So our health growing up, I mean, we could eat anything, peanut butter, honey, anything we wanted. But then successive generations, my children are okay. Grandchildren, not so much. They have asthma.
Exactly.
Crazy things. I'm like, where is this coming from? And it's all got to do with what the mother ate before she became pregnant, while she was pregnant. It all has to do with that, and it takes about three generations for these things to work themselves out. Like, if my grandchildren started eating organic foods, by the time they have their grandchildren, these childhood diabetes and asthmas and allergies will go away again.
Mm-hmm.
But people, they think, most people think, everything in the grocery store, for the most part, is food. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's chemicals, and it's killing people.
That's
and
right.
I walk through, I'm a pretty friendly person, and I'll talk to anybody in the grocery store, and I go through the grocery store, and I shop the perimeter. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I don't shop in the middle where all the processed foods are.
Exactly.
And I see people's grocery carts, and I just want to stop them and say, oh, come on now. Please, let's have a little talk here.
Especially when you see they have children and their carts are just packed with all the pre-processed lunches and everything. You're like, oh, my God. And then we wonder why childhood obesity is on the rise, asthma among children. It's perfect that you mentioned that. You talk about even as close as a decade ago, asthma was not as prevalent as it is now. Diabetes was not as prevalent as it is now. And childhood obesity wasn't as prevalent as it is now. So what made this happen all of a sudden? We're supposed to be, you know, advancing in sciences, advancing in medicine. People are living longer. So how come the youngest generation on this planet is so sick? The main reason is because of pollution in their diet. They are eating things on a daily basis. They're eating GMO foods. They're eating foods. They're eating preservatives, dyes. They're consuming MSG. And for parents that aren't aware of this, that aren't enlightened to it, or that bother researching it, they're literally poisoning their kids every day without realizing it.
Every day. I mean, autism is another thing that is really, in the last 30, 40 years, is going crazy, and it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's toxins that are in the food and your shampoo, your soaps, all that.
Talk about
people
soap.
Just don't
That's
realize
a perfect
it.
Example. Did you know that triclosan, which is used in all hand soaps, antibacterial hand soaps,
mm-hmm.
triclosan is actually a toxin. And for people that keep antibacterial soap on their counter and they're washing their hands, you know, a half a dozen times during the day, they're literally absorbing a toxin. So now all these, you know, like companies that sell to Whole Foods and stuff like that, there's at least a half a dozen different brands out there of antibacterial soap that's triclosan-free. And every time something harmful comes out, you see all the natural companies rallying to like, okay, well, let's provide an alternative for people. So I only buy triclosan-free antibacterial soaps. They're very effective. Sometimes they have tea tree oil in them. Sometimes they have grapefruit extract, which are very powerful antibacterials. All right, but they're safe. You know, you can put them on your skin and leave it there. If you absorb it, it's a natural product. But just so people understand, triclosan is a poison. And again, why is the FDA allowing these things to go into our food source? It's mind-boggling to me.
It is. And that's where you have to just follow the money. I mean, you know. And it's following the money, political. There's all kinds of poisons and toxins out there that is hurting most people. Your shampoo. People think that they can go to the grocery store or Walmart and buy, you know, they might spend $5 for a small bottle of shampoo or whatever, but look at the back of it. Parabens
anything that starts with Lauris. Lauris sulfate,
yes.
Lauris something else. These are all taught, and then you're absorbing it through your scalp. So, again, I went to Publix and Walmart once. I could not find one bottle there that said paraben-free or Lauris sulfate.
Uh-uh.
But you go in Whole Foods and stores like that, and almost you have to be careful there, too, because not all of them say that. All right, I bought something that by one of my favorite brands, and I got home and it had Lauris sulfate in it, and I took it back and I exchanged it. I was like, I'm surprised you guys sell this. But I would say 90% of the shampoos and rinses that are there say paraben-free, SLS-free, Lauris sulfate-free, because these all harm us. But they're in all the standard brands.
Well, and they're
obviously
cheaper for them to
another use. Thing I've noticed, and yes, this is not cancer or it's probably due to the toxins. How many people are losing their hair and thinning out? I've never seen so many women that have such thin hair.
That there's more of that today than ever before in history. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Men
the
too.
Bottom line
I
is,
mean,
whether it's cancer or skin disorders or diabetes or whatever, they're all related. This is what people have to understand. When you degrade the immune system of the body, now the immune system is supposed to do more than just protect you. Our immune system is also supposed to refurbish our bodies and restore our bodies in the evening. But what happens is because most of the populace has a very toxic diet, they use toxic chemicals on their skin to clean their house with, so at night, instead of repairing and refurbishing the body, they're detoxing. So the body is overwhelmed with this process of taking the garbage out and doesn't go in and look for damaged cells and things that need to be repaired and stuff. And over time, the person degrades and degrades and degrades. We call it old age. But yet people that have cleaner diets, that are more conscious of the cleaning products they use, that have a better attitude about life, get into their 80s and 90s and don't have pain and don't have immobility and don't have problems with their memories. So this is not normal aging to become riddled with pain and start losing your memory. This isn't a normal course for humans, but we've been led to believe by medical science that it is, and that's a big tragedy, I think.
Well, let me step in here and say one thing in regard to that. It's hard to for our forefathers to have made the assumption that eventually middle age would be in your 60s. Remember the other day I talked about this book that I'm reading about the Roosevelts, and it was very rare for somebody to reach the age of 50. Very rare. And that's a part of the reason why there are so many new problems for our elderly. And that's, you know, but now that we know that, we can certainly
start
doing...
But when you do studies, but see, they all use that, and that's misinformation. because I've read books on longevity. I've read books on where in like hundreds of years ago, there were people that lived to be 150 years old. There was one guy who was the Earl. He lived in London. He was part of royalty. He was dying when he was 50 years old, cleaned up his act, stopped drinking, completely regenerated his body. The whole story is in this book. He ended up living over 200 years old. Our physical bodies have the ability to easily live over 100 years old if we make the right choices, if we eat nutritious food, if we have a good attitude. And these books on longevity, they give all these real-life people. There are people today that are living over 90 and 100 that still have all their faculties. And the ancient Essenes, going back 2,000 years ago, the ancient Essenes, on average, lived to 125 years old, on average, which means some lived more. Now, these communities were sometimes thousands and thousands of people, and on average, they lived to 125 years ago, at a time when people were barely making it to 40. So diet, attitude, and exercise absolutely impact our personal longevity. And when you understand that this has been proven over and over and over again, the Lotakis, the people that live today, there's over 347,000 of them or something in this area in India, they have a longevity that goes up into the hundreds. So it is something that our physical bodies are capable of doing.
Well, and I'm not disputing that at all. And I'm talking in the general population. I know that I've read stories about Indians, too, who lived for a very long time. But what did they do? They lived off the land. They lived off the land. And there's something to be said for, you know, that's how they decided to have vaccinations. It's giving everybody a little taste of the problem and letting their body build an immunity to it. So there's something to be said for that as well. I think that I just found lifespan of early man. Until fairly recently, little information existed about how long prehistoric people lived. Too few fossilized human remains made it tough for historians to estimate the demographics of any population. Anthropology professors Rachel Kaspari and Sang-Hee Lee, cute name, chose instead to analyze the relative ages of skeletons found in the archaeological digs in eastern and southern Africa, Europe, and elsewhere. Comparing the proportion of those who died young with those who died at an older age, the team concluded that longevity only began to significantly increase, that is, past the age of 30 or so, about 30,000 years ago, quite late in the span of human evolution. So maybe that's the hitch, Shell. Maybe when we talk about a long time ago, we're thinking about the 1800s, we're thinking about the 1700s. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about like up to 1500 AD. Life expectancy estimates, which describe the population as a whole, also suffer from a lack of reliable evidence gathered from these periods. But the ancient Greek and Roman times as short in the area of 20 to 35 years, though he laments the numbers are based on notoriously unrepresentative graveyard epitaphs and samples. So I think that's a great subject. Are you going to have that in your book? Shell? Monica?
Sorry, I had the phone on mute. Yes, I am going to be talking about that in my book, like briefly, but I am devoting one chapter to longevity and mentioning some of the other books that I've read that have quite a lot of information about it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
one of the reasons, and I'll just say this briefly so that we can get on other things. I see that we're running out of time. But, you know, one of the things that caused people to die young, because it even affected children, were plagues throughout history. Remember that we didn't always have sewage systems. We didn't always have clean environments. A lot of the lack of our being able to live past a certain age was just strictly from terribly unsanitary living conditions. You know, you had sewage running down the streets and stuff like this. So a lot of that was due to disease and illness, not due to the body's inability to live longer. It had nothing to do with the with the body breaking down, it had to do with living in unclean environments.
Yeah, well, but that just adds to the fact that we've grown and we're millions of steps ahead.
So now instead of polluting ourselves on our streets, we're polluting ourselves by what we eat.
And put on our bodies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want each of you, I'm giving each of you a minute to summarize what you think is the best advice you can give to somebody who fears cancer or who already has cancer. Shelley, you go first.
All right. The easiest thing I can say is to start looking at ways to start cleaning up your diet and what you use in your home. Start reading labels. Maybe go to a Whole Foods store and just start looking at the different options. And also try to have a better and a calmer attitude towards your life and find ways of relieving stress, meditation, yoga, reading positive affirmation books, things like that, but also get a better attitude about your life.
Mm-hmm. And I will second that. Monica?
I would say the biggest thing that I have learned is definitely it's got to be diet. The American diet is so bad, and
mm-hmm.
there's so many chemicals and GMOs and toxins and poisons that they put on vegetables, that as much as you can, people should move towards organic vegetables, organic
yep.
fruit. And I really believe that money talks, and if more people would move towards organics and shopping at farmers markets, the farmers who are pushing these GMOs and poisons they're putting on our food will stop and also move towards organics, because they don't want to lose any sales, and it's only going to help you. Another thing, if you can't eat a whole lot of vegetables, tons and tons of spinach or kale or whatever, juice it.
Yep.
Get a juicer. Put it all in there. You'll get three times the amount of nutrition, and it's easy to get down every day. And that's what we've been doing, juicing a lot, because I don't eat a whole lot of vegetables normally. But juicing is easy, and sprouting, three times the nutrition. Broccoli sprouts are more nutritious than regular broccoli. So
yep, yep. Very good advice. Very good advice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's my summation of what you both explained. You're both talking about getting back to nature. You're both talking about going back to the simpler foods. You're also talking about something that neither one of you said, but in listening to both of you, you're talking about something that's going to eventually be very imperative to the survival of most of us, and that is producing
mm-hmm.
our own food.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would say that if you are a single person and you're living someplace that you can afford, and maybe you're on Social Security and stuff like that, and you're okay. But if you have a family, there's nine of us here. Groceries are $600 a week.
Mm-hmm.
$600 a week. And I don't buy processed foods, but I certainly don't eat the way I'd like everybody to eat here. I'm a vegetarian. Nobody else here is. I would love to have a garden out back and get all of our own fresh vegetables. I do frequent farmers markets. That's where I go every weekend and get our vegetables and things like that. But
wow.
you brought up something that may be imperative to the survival of a lot of us very soon. And in doing that, you'll also increase the health and welfare of your family. So that will be for another show, talking about how we can do a lot of these things in our own homes, how we can make things that are more, I mean, taking soda away from my grandchildren is one of the hardest things I fight with every week. The hardest things I fight with. So anyway, I want to thank you both. You both had lots of words of wisdom. I hope if there was somebody out there of a trauma like this that we helped a little bit, you're always welcome to call the show. You're always welcome to contact me on Facebook. Get a hold of one of us or call the show and talk. Everybody have a great day. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks, girls.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie. Here, Monica.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.